When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The reality we live in can be a very strange place. Most of the time, fact being stranger than fiction. How will we ever start to understand this reality we live in unless we question everything? Join me and a guest as we unravel the mysteries of this reality, one topic at a time. This is Inquiries of Our Reality. Shane Jones.
Reality isn't what it seems. I'm Dr. D's taking a vote of craft with a tractor beam. Is life a simulation or an astral dream? Aliens travel through black holes in different galaxies. Life is a bizarre odyssey. With a mic talking about philosophy. Well, Bigfoot is stalking campers. As a Wendigo walks through the woods of sharpened antlers. Using a Ouija board to talk to the dead like a necromancer. There's so many questions and not enough answers. So if you're interested and mysteries and abnormalities, tune in and listen to Inquiries of Our Reality. So if you're interested in mysteries and abnormalities, tune in and listen to Inquiries of Our Reality.
What is up, inquirers, and welcome to the expanse of deep open-minded conversation. I'm the one they call Shane, and today for you guys, we're going to be diving into one of my absolute favorite topics. And for all the people who have been listening to the show for a while, I'm sure you guys fully know what it is. But of course, it's going to be Sasquatch. And today's guest actually comes from one of my personal favorite podcasts that I've been diving into. Ever since I found it, I've been diving into the back catalogs and everything. And this guy has a lot of fascinating time and research put into the whole Sasquatch phenomenon, on top of having some of his own experiences and some weird stuff going on in his property. And I definitely think you guys are going to enjoy this conversation. And we're definitely going to have to do a part two for this one, because we only got to dive into just the basics of it, of course. And next time we're going to have to get into all the philosophy and all everything else behind Sasquatch. But as for right now, before we get into this fascinating episode, we of course have to do front of house and news and updates.
Really looking forward to the next event, which will be Squonkapalooza. It will be August 10th in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. It is free for all ages, of course. There's going to be games, food, vendors, crafts, goods, entertainers, artists, cosplay, contests, and more. And of course, I will be speaking at that event, so that one will be a lot of fun. And as far as front of house goes, if anyone has an encounter that they would like to report, you guys can report those to ommencounterreports@outlook.com. No matter how big, no matter how small, I definitely want to collect them and be able to hear about them and possibly read them on the show if you guys are okay with that. And if you guys enjoy this show, please don't forget to check out my other show, Bizarre Encounters, and our YouTube/Patreon show, Bizarre Inquiries. And for that one, of course, we always take in listener questions, so don't forget to submit those listener questions so we can get that one up and rolling again, of course, too. And if anybody wants to support the show, you guys can do so through the Patreon. Always updating and changing it over there, trying to figure out exactly what you guys need. I've had a big drop as far as Patreon members go, so hopefully we can build those numbers back up. And the second way is through the OMM merch store. Over there, I'll be dropping a bunch of new designs that I've been working on recently. I'll start dropping them off one by one, of course, on the merch store, so don't forget to go and check that out over there. And if you guys don't mind leaving a review or rating for the show on iTunes or Spotify, I would definitely appreciate it. I love being able to read the 5-star reviews on the show, so if anybody leaves any of those, of course I will read it on the show and give you guys a big shout out. And to stay up to date on Inquiries of All Reality and Open Minds Media, you guys can check us out on Instagram, Facebook, Discord, YouTube, and TikTok. And every single thing that I mentioned is all available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, let's get into the show. Please welcome to the show, researcher, author, and podcaster, Brian King Sharp. How's it going today, man?
I'm good, man. I'm glad to be here.
Absolute pleasure to have you on the show. I heard you have a super interesting conversation. I was like, man, I got to have him on the show to have a good conversation. So here we are, man.
I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to have the invite, and I'm always down for conversations, man. That's what I live for.
So I guess a good spot to start before we get into the meat and potatoes of the conversation, I always like to kind of lay the groundwork with people. So for anybody that may not be familiar with who you are, what you do, your podcast, why don't you let them know a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your background?
Sure. Well, I guess the thing to start with is I typically start with my adult years when I spent 16 years in law enforcement. So that's kind of a thing that stays with you throughout. And it's kind of been one of those things that I've had to monitor as I went into podcasting, because I didn't want to be that guy interviewing people that was interrogating his guest. Right. Yep. So yeah, you kind of had to step outside, or at least I had to step outside my comfort zone and say, okay, you know, I don't want to be the guy who's interrogating folks, but I guess that's a good place to start, is the 16 years in law enforcement. And then I left that in 2016 and we decided to buy some property. So we left Georgia and ended up in North Carolina on 40 acres of property that I hoped might have some Bigfoot activity. And I have to be honest, it hasn't disappointed to this point. So we ended up on 40 acres here in a tiny house. We live in a 400 square foot tiny house out in the middle of nowhere in the middle of the woods, which is sounds like a nightmare to some people. To me, it's living the dream.
Sounds like peace, man. I'm jealous.
It is definitely peaceful out here, man. It's definitely peaceful. But outside of that, I mean, I guess the next big thing would be, after leaving law enforcement, I worked some odd jobs here and there. And I was working in retail at a shitty job that I really hated, working 50 hours a week, driving 2 hours a day round trip to a job that I hated, managing 50 people. And I was dying inside, man. And I wanted to do something different. And I've always been into music. I was a singer. I was in bands from the time I could, you know, my teenage years on through most of my adulthood. And I like to perform. I like to work with audio. I like to talk to people. I was looking for something to do. So, and I really was into Bigfoot. I wanted to talk to people who had had experiences with Bigfoot, particularly in the southeastern United States where I was born and raised. So I thought, how am I going to do that? Well, a friend of mine turned me onto a podcast a couple of years ago. It's probably at this point, it's been about 5 or 6 years ago. I listened to the first couple of episodes of an encounters-based podcast, and I fell in love, man. I was hooked with the stories. I was hooked with people saying that they had had experiences with this 8-9 foot tall bipedal hominid in North America. And I was fascinated with how many stories there were, where the stories were coming from. So I wanted to start talking to people in Georgia, in Tennessee, in Florida, in the Carolinas, where I was born and raised, that had those kind of experiences, because everybody, at least I was one of those people that thought of Bigfoot, and you think about the Pacific Northwest, right? You think of Paddy. It's got to be Bluff Creek in California and anywhere up in the Pacific Northwest area for there to be a Bigfoot. But people were experiencing those things in the southeastern United States. I knew that because I grew up as a child hearing those stories in the area that I was living in at the time, which was northwest Georgia. And there were stories everywhere about people running into these big hairy creatures. They called them wild man, woolly man, hairy man. Sasquatch and Bigfoot wasn't really in the nomenclature back then, at least in that area. So I was fascinated with that. I wanted to talk to people. So I started a podcast. I was like, well, I can always record these people talking to me, because I was really just doing it for me. I wanted to have those conversations for me so I could hear from these people what their experiences were. And then I wanted to compare them to where I was hearing experiences in other places to see if there were correlations or if anything crossed over. And sure enough, I got into some Facebook groups. I say some Facebook groups. I probably joined 500 Facebook groups. Got into everything Bigfoot, and I just started putting it out there, just a casting call. Hey, if you've had an experience with Bigfoot and you're in North Carolina or South Carolina or Georgia or Tennessee or Florida or basically anywhere, just reach out to me. I want to talk to you. Started recording the show on my phone. Sounded horrible. It was horrible. I had no idea how to podcast. I had no idea what I was doing. But I was talking to people. That was the main thing. So I started talking to people, interviewing them, recording the interviews, and I started putting out the episodes. I think I posted the first episode of Sasquatch Odyssey back February of 2021. And people, of course, weren't listening. It was a brand new podcast that nobody had ever heard of. You know, you look at your numbers and you had like 30 downloads in a week. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I didn't really get into this for people to listen to it. I just kind of got into it for me. And, you know, I kept putting the episodes out. And I don't know, probably 3 months in, I get an email from Wes Germer at Sasquatch Chronicle saying, hey, man, I listened to your show. The show's good, but your audio sucks. So let me help you with your audio. And I was like, okay, well, that was the first podcast I ever listened to. It was Wes at Sasquatch Chronicles. So am I going to say no? Of course not.
Still one of the best. One of my favorites.
Yeah, so we got on the phone and Wes helped me with some equipment. I ordered the board that he uses. I'm still using it to this day. And a microphone. And he spent hours on the phone helping me set it up and dial it in. And it changed the audio of the show overnight. Literally overnight. It went from amateur hour to, wow, this actually sounds like a podcast. And then people started listening. You know, people were already kind of listening. I had a pretty decent following, you know, 3 months in. I was doing a couple of thousand downloads a month at that point. And then, I mean, it was literally the next year, March of 2022, I left my full-time job and I started podcasting full-time. And I haven't looked back. I've been doing the same thing. You know, I've been podcasting full-time now for, gosh, a little over 2 years. So doing the show 3 years, podcasting full-time a little over 2 years. And now it's just a totally immersive experience. Bigfoot just sort of sucks you in. It's like any other cryptid, I guess. You just get full-fledged, sucked into it. It really is everything I do every single day. Whether I'm in the woods on my property or I'm writing a book or interviewing somebody or doing a speaking gig, it's literally carried me around the world at this point. I'm doing a speaking gig next month in the United Kingdom.
Wow, that's awesome.
Who thought I would ever be in the United Kingdom talking about Bigfoot as a headline speaker with Jeff Meldrum? Like, who? You could have never told me that was even in the cards for me back then when I first started getting into this. But it really has carried me. I mean, it's the best decision I ever made. I was at that point as a podcaster, and there's probably somebody listening right now who has done a podcast or is into podcasting that gets to the point where if you've monetized your show, you get to a point where I was teetering on, I'm almost replacing my income that I'm making at this crappy job that I hate, but I'm just not there yet. If I just had enough time to spend on the craft of podcasting, I could get over the hump and I think I could make enough money doing this to pay my bills and live comfortably. So finally I said, screw it. I'm just going to quit my job. I've got to devote full time. I gave myself 3 months. My better half was phenomenal and said, just go for it. You're passionate about it. You're doing a great job. People love the show. Just quit your job and see if it doesn't. We've got enough money in the bank to last 3 months. Just do it and see if it works. So fortunately for me, it worked and I've never had to go back to working a real job. I just get to podcast and talk about Bigfoot and do speaking gigs and write books about Bigfoot. It's been phenomenal. So that's a little bit about the story. I mean, that's kind of it was 7 minutes worth of an answer, but that's kind of the short version of how I got to the point where I'm at now.
Well, man, props for one, being able to podcast full time. I'm slowly on the climb being able to do that myself. And once you get into something like this, man, it becomes like it's your passion, not so much like a job. It's like you have no problem investigating, researching this stuff all the time. And like you said, podcasting in general, cryptids in general, they kind of just become your life at a certain point. And once you get to that point, there's like no looking back. Like you feel like if you just stop doing the podcast or you just stop researching this stuff, you'd almost be like missing a part of yourself at a certain point.
Yeah, I definitely couldn't do it. I could not go back. I've said it so many times. I would have to find something in and around this kind of thing, whether it be podcasting or researching full time. It's a hard road to hoe to be a full time researcher. There are very, very few full time researchers. I think one of the only ones that I know personally is Todd Standing that has been able to do it. I have my opinions about Todd's, but I give him props because he does what he loves to do. It's his full-time job. He is a full-time Bigfoot researcher. Say what you want about him. As I said, I've got my own opinions about Todd, but he's doing it. And it's very difficult to make a living doing this. And there's plenty of people that look down on you. I have a lot of haters, just like other podcasters who do this full-time, that they really hate the fact that you make money off of something they feel like you shouldn't be making money off of. I've got another podcast called That Bigfoot Podcast that I host with Wayne, my co-host, and we've done entire shows about the business of Bigfoot. And I mean, that's something we can get. I'll go down any road you want to go down, but it's something that I'm passionate about because there's so many people that get pissed off for people doing television shows where they make money on Bigfoot, or they write a book and make a couple of bucks about Bigfoot, or they charge people to take them out in the woods, very much like Todd does on his expeditions. I'm like, look, if somebody is willing to pay you $3,500 to come out and spend 7 days in the woods and look for Bigfoot, What's the problem with that, right? It's a free country. It is capitalism. People have the ability to do that. I don't charge anybody for any of my shows. All of my shows are 100% free to everybody. I do have memberships where people can get things early and they can get ad-free shows, but everything I've ever done as far as a podcast has been put out for the masses for free. Now, you may have to sit through some ads. We have programmatic ads. It's how we pay our bills and live read ads, but the show has always been and will continue to be free. So, yeah, I got off on a tangent. Sorry.
No, you're good, man. We can definitely get into the business of Bigfoot. Because, I mean, I'd even want to throw in the idea that a lot of people don't realize it with a podcast just because they listen to it every week, they enjoy it and stuff, but they don't actually realize how much is actually going on behind the scenes, that you're spending late nights setting up editing, setting up things with guests. It's not even like trying to be rude about trying to collect money for it. It's just a matter of like, if you had an artist that's made these beautiful paintings, like the person would expect to hopefully make something for their time and effort too, instead of just giving it all away for free. And I mean, it's kind of the same with podcasting, because I kind of see it as it's like an art form. You work really hard on it. So everybody deserves to get paid for their work realistically. But I definitely, like I said, want to get into the whole business of Bigfoot thing, like you were just mentioning. And I definitely want to make sure that we have time to get into your book and get into some of your Sasquatch experiences. So I guess whatever road you kind of want to lead it down first, I'm here to follow, man.
Yeah, well, let's go back down to, I guess we can get the experience stuff out of the way. There hasn't been a ton of experiences, but the first experience that I believe I had with a Sasquatch was when I was around 12 years old. I was hunting in the woods where we lived in Northwest Georgia, and I didn't see anything, but I was out in the woods in an area I hadn't been in before. And I get into this area, and I immediately have that feeling that everybody talks about, where the hair on the back of my neck stood up, the hair on my arms stood up, and I felt like I'm not supposed to be here. I need to be in another place other than here right now. And then I heard something crashing through the woods. It sounded bipedal. And it, in retrospect, I've said it so many times now, I didn't know what a bluff charge was back then because I was 12 and I was poor and we didn't have much television, so I didn't see what a bluff charge was by watching Animal Planet or whatever the case may be back then. But now I know it to be what sounds like a bluff charge. This thing is coming, you know, 10, 12 feet away from me in the scruff and the brush, just outside my field of vision. And I think it was bluff charging me. I heard huffs, growls, grunts. It was nothing that I could identify, and still to this day can't I identify. It wasn't a deer. It wasn't anything that I would know would exist in those woods at the time that I had experienced. But I know it terrified me. I was stuck in that spot. I think I wrote about it in the book, and I described it as feeling like my legs were wooden stakes that were stuck into the ground. That's just kind of the feeling that I had. I couldn't move. And then eventually, this thing never got any closer than probably 10 or 12 feet, but I could tell whatever it was pissed off, and I needed to be out of there. So the fight or flight finally kicked in, and my legs started working again, and I turned around and hauled ass the 600 or 700, 800 yards back to the house. Jumped over the barbed wire fence, and I was kind of, okay, I'm safe. I'm back in the yard. And I went inside, and my mom was inside, and I didn't tell her what had happened. I didn't know how to describe what had happened. What am I going to say? Something sounded like a bulldozer coming through the woods, huffing and gruffing and growling. She'd have been like, yeah, whatever, dude. You know. So I didn't know what to say. I didn't tell her about it. I didn't tell my mom about that experience, I think, until probably 4 years ago, maybe. She was like, I never knew that happened in that house. And I was like, yeah, there was a lot going on in that house. I had some really weird paranormal experiences, I guess ghost experiences, in that same house. I heard talking, I heard scratching on the walls, just a really heavy sort of demonic kind of feeling. And we knew that the people who had lived in that house before us had been into devil worship. It was kind of a small town. Like, we didn't even have a caution light, so everybody knew everybody, and everybody knew everybody's business. And these two brothers that were the sons of the guy that we were renting the house from, we knew that they were into devil worshiping and some wild, crazy stuff. I don't know if there was something they conjured up, but I dealt with it the entire time we lived in that house. It petrified me. It terrified me. So I was having that going on inside. Then I'm thinking Bigfoot's chasing me in the woods. It was a lot going on. And then I found out later on, when my mom and I started talking about this, she told me that my dad was experiencing things that he had confided in her. Now, mind you, he was taking drugs, and mostly he was drunk most of the time. So I take that with a grain of salt, that he was hearing, and but he was hearing and describing and experiencing some of the very same things that I was, and I certainly wasn't high or drunk at 12 years old. So I think there was some continuity in the stories and what might have been going on and what we might have been experiencing. So it was a lot at one time to be dealing with at that age.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we are back. So let's hop right in.
And then after that, you know, just kind of go on with your life. We moved to a different house. We moved into a different area. It was more of a urban area that we moved to after that. My mom and dad divorced and a lot of things changed. And Bigfoot was always there for me, but it was just on the periphery of life. You know, you go through other things. Nessie was always my favorite cryptid, even before Bigfoot. So you just grow up and you move on and you start working and you do your life. And I suppressed that for a lot of years when I was in law enforcement. You don't go to work as a police officer in the city of Atlanta and talk about Bigfoot and UFOs. I had a UFO experience when I was 16. So I definitely had all of these experiences, but it wasn't something you talked about, right?
Yeah, otherwise they'll have you check for a mental check just to be safe as a police officer.
Exactly. I did a lot of DUI and I went to court all the time. And those DUI attorneys are ruthless. They are looking for anything in your past or in your life that they can dig up and talk about to discredit you on the stand, because I was winning a lot of DUI cases, right? So I didn't want to talk about anything like that until I got out of law enforcement. Like I said, we left, my better half and I were both City of Atlanta police officers. We left that in 2016. And then I was able to get back into what I really loved, which was being in the woods. And I really got into the Bigfoot podcast, like I said. And it was just something that just the fascination just took over for me. And we bought this property specifically because of the area that it's in North Carolina. As soon as I saw it, I was thinking, ooh, this is squatchy. That was literally the first thing that I thought. And I really hate that word. I said that just because of Bubba. But I love you, Bubba, if you're listening to this. It's definitely a Bubba word. But I did have that feeling of, if I were a Sasquatch, if I were a Bigfoot, I would live here. There's two creeks on the property. There's nothing around us but land. This is the perfect spot, right? So we bought the property. We bought it in 2017, and we weren't living here full time until just about 3-4 years ago. But we'd come up often and camp out because we're having a house built. Our tiny house was being built in a different area. And we actually lived here on the property once we left the police department, and between getting here full time, we lived here off grid for a year and a half with no running water and no power other than solar. It was a rough year and a half.
Well, I can only imagine.
But we got through that. We got the tiny house here. And that's really when the experiences started happening here. And it started with vocalizations. We would hear, I think the first time we heard it was the first winter we were here full time. We'd got the house here. We had a hot tub on the outside of the house, just off the front deck. And we'd go out there at night, you know, unwind. And I started hearing what sounds like the Ohio howl vocalization, probably a mile, mile and a half up this ridge behind us. And I was like, that's really weird, right? I mean, you hear it in the distance and you say, wow, that could be, right? It sounds like a air raid siren. Well, there's not an air raid siren going on. It sounds like the Ohio howl, because that's what the Ohio howl sounds like. One of those old hand crank air sirens. We heard that several times. And we had some other weird stuff going on with lights on the property. We've woken up a couple of times in the tiny house. There's nothing but windows up in the loft where we sleep. And when it's dark out here, it's dark. If you live where there's no light pollution, when you say, oh, it gets dark here early, or it's dark out here, people go, oh, yeah, I know what dark is. No, you don't. You don't know what dark is until you can't see a neighbor's porch light. There's no street lights. There's no nothing.
Don't know dark until you can actually see the Milky Way.
Exactly. Exactly. We're not exactly there yet, but we're close, closer than most. But yeah, the first time that happened, we woke up and the entire woods around the house, the entire inside of the house was lit up, almost like something was over the top of the house, shining a spotlight down on the house. Really weird. There was another time we were in the hot tub out front and we had something that was coming over the back of the house towards the front of the house. And same thing, it was lighting up that whole area and then it just disappeared. It was gone. So other weird things, but the vocalizations we heard over the course of that winter and into that spring and summer, we probably heard maybe 5 times. Once or twice, and then it would be gone, and it's way in the distance. I'm thinking, it could be a dog, it could be a coyote, it could be something else. I had finished up some interviews, and I was doing some show notes up in the loft one night after I'd finished down, shut down the show for the night, making some notes and getting ready to go to bed. I was going to read a little bit. We had all the windows open. It was like 50 degrees outside. It was perfect for sleeping with the windows open, at least for us. So the windows are open. I'm making notes. My better half's reading a book. And we hear what sounds like the Ohio howl. Ends with like this kind of a bark on the end. But this time, it's probably 50 yards behind the house in the woods. Whew. Really close. Like we felt it. We felt it in our chest. You know, when people say, or if you've heard enough encounter stories related to Bigfoot or talked to enough people, at this point, I've probably talked to over 1,000 people, interviewed 1,000 people at this point that have had Bigfoot encounters. And the ones that involve vocalizations that are close like that, that's the first thing they'll tell you is it's hard to describe, but you felt the sound just as much as you hear it. I felt it in my chest. I felt it everywhere.
Most people say it's kind of like sitting next to the big bass speakers at a concert that you feel it deep in your chest and it feels like you're like skeletons vibrating.
Yeah, that's a very good analogy for what it was like. So I look over Danny, I'm like, did you hear that? Yes, I heard that. What was that? I don't know. What do you think it was? Well, I don't know. I never heard anything that sounded like that. So we do this back and forth. It's kind of like Laurel and Hardy for a second. We're like, it just came down to the point where there was only two options for me. It was either a person 50 yards from our house, which means they're deep into our property that we own, which they're not supposed to be there. Or it was possibly a Sasquatch that made this vocalization. I mean, that's the only two things I could come to because, and people of course have asked me, well, didn't you go outside and see? Hell no, I didn't go.
When you're in that situation, definitely not.
I had no desire to go outside in the dark and go traipsing off into the woods. I'm not doing that. Mm-mm.
Just imagining that vocal range, just imagine the size of the thing. I mean, if you can feel it in your chest, like imagine what that thing could do to you physically.
Yeah, it really went down to the point where I did not feel it was a person. Now, if it had been a person, we've had that situation a couple of times here. We've had people encroach on our land. One time when I was here, I was able to confront them. And the other time I wasn't here and they stole a camera, but it's way down closer to the road. Our house is quite a ways in the woods off the road here. We're not just sitting right next to a main street, right? So I didn't think it was a person. So I definitely was not going to go out into the woods. Just, it is what it is. So after that happened, there really wasn't any other vocalizations that I can think of in the short term after that. But the next weird thing I guess would have been, I was walking the dogs. We have these trails that go around this, I guess it's probably a 10 or 12 acre area on the property that we walk every day. And we've literally cut out trails to walk the dogs. And I walk the dogs on this trail every single day, at least twice a day. They eat breakfast and they eat dinner. We take them on a walk both times. Sometimes they'll go on a couple of walks even during the day. I came around this little corner and there's a stump over to the right, past it every day, past it that morning when I walked the dogs. This afternoon, the sun was out. It was pretty high overhead, probably about 4:30. And something caught my eye that was shiny. And I look over to the stump and it's this old cedar stump. It's probably about 14 inches around or so. It's not very big. It's been there forever. We know they'd been logging here on the property like decades and decades ago. So it's probably one of those trees or some previous owner or whatever had cut it down. But I look over in the side of the stump and there is this white, bleached white turtle shell that's just the size of a regular turtle that you'd see crossing the road. And it is stuck into the side of the stump. And I'm like, that wasn't there this morning. Like, I would have saw that. I would have noticed it because I walked right past it. And it's probably 12, 15 feet off the side of this trail. So I walk over and I look, and this thing is stuck into the side of this stump. It's not sitting on top. It's not leaning on it. It's literally like something stuck it into the side of the stump. So I pick up this turtle shell and I'm like, I don't even know what to say. I'm like, that is just weird. Like, how did this happen, right? So I go back to the house with the turtle shell, and I start doing some research. I just start looking. And sure enough, I start looking, and people are posting about finding these turtle shells, and they believe it's related to Sasquatch. And I'm like, okay, people are going to think I'm nuts because I'm a very skeptical person. I probably should have started there. I probably sound like I'm drinking the Bigfoot Kool-Aid at this point, but I am a very skeptical Occam's razor, scientific method kind of guy, right? I automatically go to, oh, well, you know, raccoons will eat turtles and they'll turn things upside down and they'll stick things on the side so they can get a better grip. Like they don't have opposable thumbs like us, but they carry things. I mean, you see the videos of raccoons all the time. So I'm thinking, okay, maybe a raccoon was eating this turtle, but it wasn't there this morning at like 8:30, 8 o'clock when I took the dogs on the walk. Raccoons are primarily nocturnal. I don't think a raccoon was eating this turtle. And the thing about it is it's bleached. It's clearly old. It's bleached completely white. So it's been out in the sun for umpteen months at this point to get to the state that the shell is in. Nothing makes sense. So I can't Occam's razor it away at this point. So I'm just kind of baffled. So I walk back up to the stump and I kind of place the turtle shell where I found it. And I do a couple of videos and post them online. And people start talking about Bigfoot leaving them turtles. And I start getting pictures and videos of people finding turtles, turtle shells with rocks in them and marbles in them. And people are claiming that they're leaving them with feathers. Like, I don't know. But that immediately turned into a gifting stump of sorts because I then started leaving other things. I'd leave rocks out there. I started leaving some peanut butter, well, sun butter. We eat a lot of like ground sunflower seeds or sun butter. And we'd have jars of that. I would put those out there and I had three or four of those completely disappear. I stuck them down into the stump where it would be almost impossible for anything unless you had a hand to pull it out of the inside of the stump. We lost a couple of those. And I put up trail cameras. I put up a trail camera. And I was never able to catch anything on video other than the first couple of times I put out sun butter, I would catch three or four raccoons on video and still photos from this trail cam walking around looking. But the jar would still be inside. You could see the lid, this bright yellow lid inside this stump untouched. I'm thinking, well, could it be the raccoons? Yeah, I'm seeing them in the video, but I'm not seeing a photo or video of a raccoon dragging this thing off. So it's kind of weird.
You had the lid on it too. So they would have had to actually twist and open the lid on top of that.
Exactly. It was completely sealed. So I thought I'm going to try something different. I knew Todd. I knew other people were gifting apples. So I thought, okay, that's kind of a cool thing. Let me see about an apple. See what that does, right? So we had some apples in the fridge that were kind of going bad. They weren't completely gone at this point, but it wasn't my favorite kind of thing to eat an apple that's got like brown spots or whatever. So I take this apple, I stick it on a stick. So I just jammed it into the stick. Then I take the stick out to the stump and I stick it in the middle of the stump and the apple's just standing up there. Go back to the house, get up, walk the dogs the next day. Apple's still there. Nothing's touched. Same thing the next day. Nothing. Apple still there, untouched. Third day, I think I grabbed the Yeah, I grabbed the SD card, I think the third day out of the trail camp, brought it in. I saw a video of, I think it was two or three raccoons around the apple, but it was untouched. So fourth day, I come down the trail that morning, walking the dogs, and I look over at the apple, and it's kind of tilted a little bit. So it immediately caught my eye, something's different. I walk over to the apple, and it's still on the stick, stuck in the middle of the stump. But I pick it up, and it looks like something picked the stick up and took a bite out of the apple, like a person, and stuck the stick back down into the middle of the stump. I was blown away. And this, now by this fourth day that it had been out there, this apple was already kind of going bad. It was like that on one side of where the bite was, there was mold, like on the apple. It was not something you'd want to bite. So I took a couple of photos of it with my iPhone. I took it back to the house and I took a couple of photos and I sent them to Wayne, who's now the co-host of that Bigfoot podcast with me. And I just said, tell me what this looks like. I didn't give him any context. He had no idea where it came from. He didn't know anything about the gifting stump or any of that. And he just came back with, it looks like somebody took a bite out of a nasty apple. And I said, that's what I thought. Because you could literally see like blocky teeth. I'll have to send you the photos. I'll gladly send you. I think I still got them on my phone.
I was going to say, I wanted to check that out. And I was curious if you could see like teeth marks to kind of get like a idea of how big the teeth were that bit it.
Yeah, you can. And I was like, I don't know what to say, dude. And I told him the backstory and he's like, holy shit, I think you might have a Bigfoot that decided to take a bite out of your apple. And I'm like, it's very difficult for me to say because nothing was captured on the trail cam. What did it? I was trying to imagine some sort of an ungulate, maybe a deer. That's the only thing we'd have here is a white-tailed deer. But how would a deer turn its neck? And I mean, the stump is like maybe 12 inches off the ground. It's very low to the ground. Nothing made sense to me other than somebody or something walking over and picking this apple up on the stick, like a candy apple you'd get at a carnival, taking a bite and sticking it back into the stump. I don't know, man. That's probably one of the weirdest things that we've experienced here as far as possible evidence of Bigfoot. But I guess the main pieces of evidence that I've captured here is footprints.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. And we are back. So let's hop right in.
That started, I think I cast the first set of prints here, or the first print a year and a half ago, maybe not that long ago. I was walking the trail that we walked the dogs on. Came around the last stretch, which is about 225, 230 yards from the house at this point. Not in a straight line because you can't, the terrain goes up and it's pretty interesting to get to unless you're on the trail. I come across what looks like a footprint right in the middle. There's just one. It's just this wet area, low-lying area on the side of the trail. 14 and a half, 15 inches. I cast it. I think the next time we found a footprint was on another area of our property. We only have 40 acres. It sounds like a lot, and it is an expanse of land. And there's still places that we haven't hiked yet. We try to hike a different area every time we go out for a hike because we haven't seen it all yet. So we went to an area we'd certainly never been to. It's on the very far end of the boundaries of our property to our neighbor's property. And we go up this area. I was not going to do anything Bigfoot. I wasn't even going to bring my phone because I was just going out to decompress and take a hike. But I did end up bringing my phone. Danny and I are going up and walking, and I go to step over this little creek area. And I look down, and I'm like, holy shit, that looks like a foot. It looks like a footprint. Thinking, that is so cool. It's like a pareidolia footprint, right? I'm like, oh, it looks like little toes. And I'm going to take a picture of that. So I take my phone out and I'm looking and I'm getting closer. And I'm like, this is in water, mind you. It's in standing water. It's about a half inch of standing water. And the closer I get to make the picture look better and give some like detail, I start picking out five toes. And I'm like, wow, that looks like toes. And then I looked closer and I could see where it looked like the toe, the big toe. So it would be a, I guess, a right footprint kind of smashed down. And then I could see the heel where the heel kind of lifted up and pushed off. And I'm thinking, oh my God, that looks like a footprint. And of course, Danny's in front of me going, we're not doing Bigfoot stuff. Let's go take the picture. Let's go. We're hiking, right? So I'm snapping the pictures. And then we go up and we find, I found what looked like some tree structures, some fulcrum type things, like things balanced on top of other things, just weird looking things that don't look normal to me. It wasn't normal deadfall that I would consider indicative of possible Sasquatch activity, right? And then we get to the very back of the property, and some of these pictures are actually in the book. We get to the back of the property. There's a huge rock stack at the back of our property. And I'm like, I'm talking, I don't know, I'm guesstimating probably 7 or 8 rocks. Big on the bottom, then they just get smaller as they go up. Stacked on the back of our property. I'm like, okay, possible footprint, what looks like tree breaks, like nests, some things that look like possible nests. These fulcrum type things balanced on top of others. And now we get to the back of the property on a hike where we're not doing anything Bigfoot related or looking for anything Bigfoot related. Now we got a big rock stack. And I'm thinking, weird, right? So I just filed the possible footprint that I photographed back in the back of my mind. And I kind of marked the area in my brain thinking, okay. Because we'd had rain like the previous 3 days. We had this little window of time where it wasn't raining when we took this hike. And then we had more rain that was moving in for the next couple of days. So I get back to the house, to the internet. We don't have any service without our Wi-Fi here. And I sent it to, the first person I texted was Doug Hychek. And I sent Doug a text and I said, tell me what you think this looks like. And Doug, being Doug, says, it almost looks like a footprint, but it also looks like it could be a thumbprint where something put its hand down. And I see, and he kind of points to where this area that I thought I would call a big toe for a right foot was, it almost looked like it was a thumbprint where this thing might have been quadrupedal and pressed down into the mud. I'm like, of course, Doug's going to confuse me even more because that's what he does, right? So I kind of filed it away. I showed it to a couple of people. I think I posted it on Instagram. It's been on my Instagram for a while. I sent it to Wayne, my co-host at That Bigfoot Podcast. He's like, that looks like a footprint, dude. So fast forward last summer, I think it was last June, I did a speaking gig at a conference out in Idaho. I was out there with Cliff Berrickman, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, Michael Freeman, and myself. And it was the night before we went out to dinner, and then Cliff and Michael and another guy, Brandon, went out for some drinks. So we're sitting at the bar and I take out my phone and I'm looking at stuff. And I said, Cliff said, what are you looking at? And I said, well, I took these pictures that I thought was a pareidolia footprint. He's like, let me see it. So he's looking and Cliff goes, dude, that's a Sasquatch footprint. Did you cast that? And I'm like, of course I didn't cast it. It was in rain. It was in the rain. It was in water. And I'm pissed off at this point because now Dr. Jeff Meldrum is probably the quintessential footprint expert, cast expert, foot expert. He knows all about the morphology of these things. But Cliff is a very close second to me. I really trust Cliff implicitly when it comes to his opinion about these things, because he's probably seen close to as many footprints at this point and cast of footprints that Meldrum has seen. And he's going, dude, that's definitely a Sasquatch footprint and a good one. That's a really good picture of a good looking Sasquatch footprint. I'm like, oh, shit, should have cast it. So I immediately went out and made sure that I had casting material, and I've never went hiking without casting material since, because the next footprint that I saw was a mile up the street on the other side of our road. My neighbor has 10 acres and we went to hike his property at one point after I found that. So this was last year. Again, we're not really doing anything Bigfoot related. We had two of our neighbors, Wendy and Faith, went with us. They just wanted to go for a hike. They're clearly not into Bigfoot. I was the only person who was even remotely interested in Bigfoot. So I'm looking around, looking at things, and we go up to the very back of his property. And then we go over the ridge and we're starting to make our way down because eventually their property, they have 10 acres, it connects to his. And we have to cross over another 10 acres of another neighbor's property to get back to theirs. So we're traipsing along and la, la, la. And I'm coming down the hill and I see what clearly looks like a footprint. But this looks more like a human barefoot footprint, but it's in hard pack. And I don't know how anything that 200-300 pounds could have made any kind of indention because it was a very small indention. It was just enough to make out the toes in this thing, particularly the big toe. So I found that. And then what looked like about 5 feet down, about a 4.5, 5 foot stride was a left footprint. So I'm like, okay, I did not have casting material with me then because I wasn't supposed to be doing Bigfoot stuff. We were just relaxing with the neighbors. So I kind of marked this in my mind and I came back the next day. I got my casting material. I hiked back up with my neighbor on his property and I got to cast both of those footprints. Those photos made it into the book as well. But the most prevalent, I guess the best, if you want to call good, better, or best, came about at this point, 7-8 months ago. It's towards the end of the year last year. We have a couple of chicken coops. We have a chicken coop down towards the front of our property. Then we have a really small coop where we keep babies until they get big enough to go into the bigger coop. And it's about 50 yards, 60 yards from where I'm sitting now in the house. And we'd had a bunch of rain. And it's kind of strange because we had tried to dig out. We had ducks at the time. We no longer do because we have a lot of coyotes and a lot of predators that took care of the ducks and both of our turkeys that we had, rest their souls.
Them ducks get dirty real quick too. Cause I had some ducks for a little while and I ended up just sticking with the chickens just because of how much extra work the ducks are.
Well, what we wanted to do, we have a little bit of a natural pond that's down in a certain area close by to the house, but we wanted to dig out this like probably 6x4 area. Kind of looks like a kidney bean shape. We were going to get one of those galvanized steel things you can get at Tractor Supply and put down there. We're going to make a little area for the ducks to swim in. So we have a creek, but it's kind of fast running and it's not very deep. So we wanted to make something they could just come out and swim around in and be cool, right? Little baby ducks swimming. Kumbaya. So we dig this out, but we hadn't put anything in it. And because of the rain, it washed a whole bunch of dirt and silt down over the course of a couple of weeks of us not putting this in like we were supposed to and me completing the project. So it was the perfect area to capture a footprint. It was almost like it was made for this. But I go out one day to open the chicken coop. And we'd had some weird things leading up to that. We had a small pail of chicken food. It was almost like it is like a small version of the big galvanized steel trash cans, right? But this was only like, I don't know, 1.5 feet tall or whatever. We just kept a little bit of chicken food up there for the chickens that were on that end. And it had been moved several times to the point of maybe 15, 20 yards away. It's like something just picked it up and just dropped it on the ground. And the only thing that was holding it to the lid on was like this bungee cord over the top because we'd had raccoons that had opened it up in the past. So we just put a bungee cord over it, solved the problem. They don't get in it anymore. But this is picked up and moved 15 or 20 yards and dropped in a different area. I would wake up. This happened probably 3 or 4 days before I found the prints that I'm about to tell you about. So that happened. And then I walk up there one day and sure enough, this thing has moved again. It's in a different place. It wasn't next to the coop. It was down 15, 20 yards down the hill. And this time it was open and the contents were everywhere. It's like something had just picked it up, took the bungee cord off and just poured the food onto the ground, which I thought was really weird. But I walk up to go up to the coop and I look over in this area where this little pond we were going to make is, and I see two huge prints in this dirt silt. And I literally did one of those things where you look around like, okay, who is it? Like what's happening here? This is crazy. Cause this is 60 yards, 50, 60 yards from our house, 14.5x7.5x8 inch prints. 5 toes, clear as day, probably 3 inches down in this silty area. And I thought, okay, So I saw those and I ended up casting them, and I got to the point where I was like, these are too good to be true. It really is too good to be true. I didn't put any pictures out. I didn't talk about them. And I was writing the book at the time, and I said, you know, I'm going to probably end up talking about this in the book, and I'm probably going to end up putting these photos in the book, because here's the thing. I'm a Bigfoot guy, right? I'm a Bigfoot podcaster. And now I'm the guy who bought 40 acres in North Carolina, who now has Bigfoot activity on his property, right? That's the guy I felt like. And I had conversations with people behind closed doors. I'm like, I don't know if I should even be talking about this, because the haters are going to come out saying, oh, now this guy's, he's hoaxing footprint and he's having vocalizations. And I'm like, anybody who knows me knows that's not me, but I did think about that. So I had a hard time even talking about some of the experiences we were having in the beginning, but I thought, you know what? I can't be a hypocrite. I do a show where I ask people, and it's difficult. You know, I'm sure you've had these people that you have to work to get some of these people on your show because they're so petrified of telling their story publicly, particularly if it's the first time, because they think people are going to ridicule. It's the ridicule factor. They're going to be called crazy. I wasn't worried about that. I don't give a shit what anybody thinks about me as far as me being crazy, but I do have a reputation, and I pride myself on being honest and open, and I tell the truth. That's all I can do is put it out there. So I was like, you know, people were telling me behind the scenes, look, dude, it's happening to you. Put it out there. And of course, people are like, oh, yeah. The one footprint, because I've had that happen a couple of times. I found on at least two different occasions, possibly three different occasions in different areas, I found what looked to be footprints. Now, these are not definitive by any stretch of the imagination. If you see the photos in the book and you see the cast, which I have, they look like shit, right? Which, after a conversation with Cliff, that's one of the things we talked about so many times. Cliff has become a really good friend of mine. He actually wrote the foreword to my book. That's one of the things Cliff tells everybody. Cast everything. The majority of it is going to look like crap. But if it's real, if you are casting real prints, that's a good indicator that what you're casting is real, because they don't look perfect every single time. Now, if I cast every single print that I've cast on my property and my neighbor's property, and they all look like the two that I cast here 60 yards from my house, I could see where people would go, this dude is faking stuff. But the majority of them look like crap. But I do cast everything because of that. So I encourage everybody to do that. If you think it even remotely has anything to do with a Bigfoot print or whatever, cast it. Doesn't matter if it turns out looking like crap, you still have the evidence. So that's been the journey, man. And that's until literally yesterday. And that, I've not even talked about this on my show. I'm not going to get into a whole lot of detail here, but I was walking the dogs yesterday. We were both actually walking the dogs. We have three dogs. We have a 15-year-old small dog who's about 7 pounds, and then we have two bigger female dogs, and they run off and leave him. Well, my better half was walking with the dogs up front, and I was stuck with the old man in the back of the pack. And there was an area we got to where I could turn off. It's about halfway, three quarters of the way around the entire area. He's slow poking. I'm ready to get back to have dinner. I still had to work out. So I'm like, okay, dude, we're going to take a left here. We're going to go down what we call Chicken Run. It's this big long area where the water came down and rushed into this area where I got those prints eventually. But we're in that same general vicinity. And we have a compost pile that's up on the right of this path. If you're walking up, we're coming down the compost pile's on the left. And there's this like drainage area where there's leaves everywhere. I mean, there's probably still a foot of leaves and leaf litter on the ground at this point. And I look over and I see what looked like impressions. I'm like, that's weird. It looks like something's been walking there. So I take the dog back and I put him on the porch with the two girls, and I grab my phone and I'm like, I'm going to walk back up Chicken Run here and I'm going to take a look at this. Looks like a trackway. Then he's like, okay, yeah, I'm sure it's a trackway. So I walk up, and sure enough, dude, I get to the bottom of where it looks like this starts, and I found, I think it's 14. Looks like 14 tracks. Walking up, and then taking a right and going up the hill, which would be towards like the middle part of our the rest of our property. Like, this can't be. This can't be. But there's some pretty defined tracks. I did not cast them today, but I am going to go out hopefully tomorrow and try to cast at least a couple of them that look like they have some detail of possible toes. I did take some photos. I did take the measuring tape out there. They measured about 16 and a half inches, which is bigger than the original ones that I cast, which are about 14 and a half to 15 inches last year. So definitely bigger, at least longer. I couldn't tell if they were wider or not because of the material, the leaf litter that they're in. There's not a really clear footprint per se, but there's a five foot stride between 1 foot to the other. I tried to do it. I was almost doing the splits, trying to put my right foot where this right foot looked like it was and the left foot. And it's a trackway. I don't know any other way to describe it. So
we will be right back after this brief commercial break. So stay tuned. And we are back. So let's hop right in. I mean, just to throw that in too, I always like talking about the distance between the tracks when you actually are able to find them. I mean, the average person, roughly 2 to 3 foot stride. So if you're looking at something that has a 5 foot stride, assumably you're looking at something that's at least around 8 feet tall. So it gives you a pretty good indicator of height.
Yeah. The couple that I really got detailed in, like I was trying to get to as close to the back of what appeared to be the right foot and the very tip top toe of what appeared to be the left foot. And I was measuring the stride that way in between, and almost every set, with exception of a couple, were 5 feet. And then, I could have been off, but it was 4.5 to 4.75 feet for the other one. So within the margin of error, we're looking at a 5 foot stride between these prints. So, and that literally happened yesterday evening. So that is as hot off the press as it gets. We're right at a little over 24 hours. And I haven't even talked about it on my show yet because I really was waiting until I did the cast to see what I pulled out. I'm going to try a couple of different things. I'm probably even going to reach out to Cliff and maybe even Michael Freeman, because they do a lot more with cast and that kind of material than I do, to see if there's some way I can put down sort of a barrier, maybe even like some like plastic wrap or something between the leaves so I can maybe get a little bit more definition. I don't know. I'm going to have to look into it. I'm definitely not a tracking or casting expert by any stretch of the imagination, but I definitely want to do my very best to, there's a couple that I've picked out both right and left foot that I think I can get pretty decent cast from. So I'm definitely going to work on that and try to do that tomorrow. So,
yeah, man, you'll have to keep me updated on those. I definitely want to see how they end up turning out. That would have been my best guess too, honestly, was to use some type of like plastic wrap or something, because I was almost going to say like cheesecloth or something, but I don't know if the plaster itself would stick to that because it's a little bit more porous.
Yeah, I think the cheesecloth would, because that's one of the things that I know Michael uses for his mother mold. So when you're making a mold like silicone or whatever, you use the cheesecloth to go along with the plaster, so it'd probably stick. So I don't know if maybe the plastic wrap, I'm going to try it first with it. So even if it goes wrong, I'm not going to mess up the print because I can just pull the plastic wrap out, right? So worst case scenario, I'll just have to pour the plaster in the leaves and then get whatever I get and just clean it up afterwards. So, but interesting, man. It's the weird thing is, again, I'm very skeptical. I'm skeptical of my own evidence. I'm skeptical of my own experiences. I had experiences. I went out on expedition with Todd Standing last year up in Radium, BC, Canada, last October. And I had experiences there. I had rocks thrown at me. We had whoops. We had wood knocks. We had what sounds like samurai chatter while we were sitting around the fire. Almost every day I was there, I had something that I believe was very close to, if not live, interacting with the Sasquatch. And I still question it to this day, but we're in the middle of nowhere. We're 18 miles deep in the woods. Everybody who is with our party, including Todd, is sitting right next to me at the fire, and something's throwing rocks out of the woods, and it's hitting near us, and it's hitting the camper that's 10 feet away from us. I don't know what else would do that. What else throws rocks in the woods? I don't know. That happened twice during the expedition. So again, I didn't see a Sasquatch, but I had that experience, and I'm skeptical to this day. I still am not completely sold on the fact that these things exist, even given my own experiences and finding what I believe to be a freaking trackway yesterday on my property, I still can't get to the point where I'm 100% all in on the Bigfoot thing. But those kind of experiences really make me wonder. There's got to be something to it. The phenomenon's real, right? We know the phenomenon exists.
Man, when it comes to any of that kind of stuff, it's always the best to be skeptic and open-minded about it at the same time. Because, I mean, that's the only way you really get somewhere with the research. Because same with the paranormal research, Sasquatch research. If every single crack you hear, every single noise you hear is exactly the phenomenon, then you're not actually going to get to any solid evidence. You got to do the process of elimination where you take away anything that's logical. And when you get to a point where there's nothing logical anymore, then you know you got something weird. And then from there, you can kind of keep building on and going on from there. But I mean, as far as the Sasquatch stuff goes too, man, I know I've been researching this stuff for a few years now. I used to grow up with my grandma telling me stories about him and everything. And I've never had my own first sight for like physically seeing one of these things, but I've definitely seen my own fair share of trace evidence. But I feel like that's kind of where the differentiation comes in, is that some people will chase this stuff their entire life and never actually get that firsthand sight encounter and never really know for sure. And then there's the other half of people who actually have those firsthand encounters, and either one of two things happens. Either one, they get the Sasquatch curse where they get enveloped by it and that's all they ever do. Or on the other side, they never end up going back to the woods again and they want nothing to do with it. And they completely deny the fact that it ever existed. But all the same, if you make it out of it without being hurt, it's an experience and it's something to document. I mean, how many people actually get that opportunity? You know, it's something special, even if it is something horrifying when you're actually in that moment.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that people have said to me, you know, obviously whoever bit the apple, it was just some random homeless person that got onto your property. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's the same thing with this trackway. It's not one of us. We didn't do it. So who did? What did? It's not a bear. It's not a dog. It's not a deer. It's not a raccoon. It's not a squirrel. So you go checking this off. And that really chapped my hide when I was, particularly the apple and the gifting stump and when the turtle shell showed up. That's what people were saying when I posted about it on social media. Oh, it was just a person. Some person came through your property. And I tried to explain to people, unless you lived in the South, unless you live in North Carolina, in this area where I live, you have no idea how people are about their property. If you're not invited to be there, you better not be there. There'd be sad singing and flower bringing for your family if you wander onto somebody else's property without permission. You just don't do it. We've had that happen here. We had a lady that was making, I call them dirt angels, bless her heart, it was some meth head that made it onto the very first part of our property from the street last year. I'm sitting here recording for the show and I hear this, what sounds like a dying Sasquatch. Sounds like a dying female Sasquatch. And I grab my shotgun, I go down to the end of the driveway and I called her Methany. She's down there doing dirt angels in the middle of my driveway. But it was a woman, right? I mean, I didn't shoot her. She ended up going to jail. I actually posted the video. It was kind of funny. I posted the video of me confronting her on Instagram. And it took me back to my days on the streets of Atlanta as a police officer. People were like, oh, you had that police voice when you told her to get up. And I was like, yeah, it's still there. It never goes away. I mean, those kind of things happen, but she wasn't that deep on my property. She didn't go back here and put a turtle shell into the side of a stump. She didn't go back here and bite this apple. She sure as hell didn't come up here and make this trackway of 16 and a half inch footprints that are 5 feet stride going up the side of this ridge. I mean, eventually you just have to get to a point. And fortunately my listeners have never really pinned me into a corner. Some people want me to, you know, they get pissed off. I get those emails. Oh, every week it's 5 days out of 7. I believe Bigfoot's real, but those other 2 days, I just don't believe. Well, you know, if you're looking for somebody to drink the Bigfoot Kool-Aid and just go along to get along and believe everything is Bigfoot, I'm not your guy. But there are tens of thousands of people who listen to my show every single week who say they're glad that I ask questions and question myself and question the people who come on the show at times. It's not all about confronting people that come on with their encounter stories. They are what they are. But if you're hoaxing or you're putting bullshit out there, I'm going to call you out. I've done it with Todd for years. I still can't believe Todd had me up here to research with him last year because I've called him a hoaxer for years. We don't talk anymore. because I continued to call him out for the crazy stuff that he does. You know, I think the last thing with Todd that really broke the camel's back with us and just completely severed ties altogether was the gondola thing. There was this huge gondola up in Canada that came down a couple of times. It caused like $5 million worth of damage to the point where this company eventually was going bankrupt and they had to sell to another company. And Todd came out with this cockamamie story about how Bigfoot had broken this 4-inch steel cable on this gondola twice because Sabe was pissed off because somebody had put a chairlift in the middle of this area. And I'm like, where do you come up with this, dude? Like, and I said on Wayne and I were talking about it on that Bigfoot podcast. And I think the line was something like, you know, every time Todd has an opportunity to talk about Bigfoot in a mature adult way, he drives to Cookerville instead. And I'm just not going to Cookerville anymore. I refuse to get in the car with you, Todd. I'm not doing it anymore. Well, as soon as that episode came out, I got a text message from Todd and he said a lot of four-letter words and called me a lot of names and he was pissed off that I called him a kook. I said, no, I didn't tell anybody you were a kook, dude. I just said, you're driving your car to Cookerville. There's a difference, but it's still the same thing. You end up at the same place. You can't have a conversation with you about Bigfoot because it always has to take this crazy left turn. And then on top of that, you hoaxed your videos and I don't have time for that. So needless to say, we don't talk, but he is doing some cool stuff up in Radium. There's a guy I've had on the show a couple of times, and I don't know, very few people know this at this point. Todd's talked about it a couple of times on his channel since, I think, but they're actually putting cameras. They have put cameras in base camp at Todd's Radium research area. And they're going to be live 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for everybody to view who wants to see them. I actually got an email from Logan yesterday saying that he is got the app ready to go, but it's not ready for prime time, but he's going to send me an early version of it so I can add it to my phone and I'm going to be able to access the cameras and see what I see. It's really cool because if you've been to base camp and you've been to that area and you kind of have a lay of the land and it's cool either way, I think, but even for me, it means a little bit more because I know where that's at. I've had experiences there. So I'm definitely looking forward to it. I told Logan, you know, here's the thing though. If you're associating with Todd and Todd's research area, and a Bigfoot can walk up and smear peanut butter on the lens of or whatever it does, nobody's going to believe it because Todd's involved. They're going to say it's Todd in a suit or it's going to be whatever. So I don't know. I still think it's a good thing. I think he's trying something new and Logan really doesn't care. He kind of knows what comes along with dealing with Todd, but I'm excited about that. I think it's cool, man, to be able to have experiences in a place like that and then somebody actually put up cameras. Because that's one of the things we've talked about on the show in the past is why isn't there more collaboration? Why aren't more people like the folks in Area X and the folks that have the Olympic Project and Shane Carpenter and Randy Harrington out at the 400? Why aren't we all collaborating? If there's so much Bigfoot activity in these areas, why isn't the BFRO and the Olympic Project and the North American Wood Ape Conservancy and these guys at the 400, why aren't we all coming together at one time and just putting people on the ground constantly, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and finally prove that Bigfoot is real? Why aren't we doing that? So why didn't I start those conversations on the show? And We had Shane Carpenter on. Shane reached out to me after we talked about it on the show. And he's like, hey, can I come on and talk about that? Because you guys talked about us at the 400. I'm like, sure, we'd love to have you. And he said, look, you know, when you have a research area like the 400, we tried to bring people in and it always ends badly. You know, we've had people try to come back after we've had them out there and kind of showed them the area. Then they tried to get on the property next to us and kind of one up us. And just people are people. Anytime you involve other people, things have a tendency for the wheels to fall off. But he said, we've tried that in the past and people have been great, but it throws things off. Like just literally what they do. They wear the same clothes. They walk the same way. They walk the same areas. They feel like Bigfoot look for patterns and they want to create these patterns. So they get comfortable with them. So they come closer and that's their thing. And anytime you bring people in, it disrupts that. So I get that on some level, but again, it goes back to, I'm putting together going to be a 4-part series at this point, maybe 5-part series on Area X. I've had Brian Brown and some of those guys from the North American, well, he's not with the North American Wood Ape Conservancy anyway, anymore. But I've had a bunch of those guys on the show at different times throughout the past on Sasquatch Odyssey. And Brian used to do a podcast back in the day. I mean, he was doing a podcast back in 2011, 2012. And he was doing all of the stuff that was coming out of Area X. He's interviewing people inside Area X while these things are throwing rocks at him. I mean, it's some pretty fascinating stuff. And the podcast went away years and years and years ago. But I reached out to Brian privately and said, look, dude, I'd like to do a series on what you guys experienced there. Because even though you had it on a podcast, it was 2012, like 12 years out, dude. Mm-hmm. And I do have a pretty big audience that would like to hear this. And he's like, sure, you can have access to all of it. So I probably got 8 hours of these interviews and these experiences from Area X. I'm going to put together and put it out probably on Sasquatch Odyssey in July, because I'll be over in the UK for that conference in July and I'll be gone for a couple of weeks. So I'm going to queue that up to drop as content while I'm gone. But it's fascinating stuff, but it just irks me that this community, you have so many people that are into this and so many people doing their own thing individually. You just can't get people to collaborate. It's so difficult to get everybody to put their eggs in one basket. They only go out about three months a year at the area they call Area X. And that's because they have a personnel issue, right? You have to have teams of people. There has to be at least 2 to 3 people on each one of these teams. They can only cover some people have to take off work. They have families. They have other things in their lives. But just think about, and this is one of the things I said to Wayne on that Bigfoot podcast when we were talking about it. I said, look, dude, the BFRO does hundreds of expeditions every year all throughout the country. Why can't the BFRO just get with the North American Wood Ape Conservancy and say, look, you guys are out here. You have this fantastic area. There's tons of documented sightings and rock throws and vocalizations and all these experiences. Guess what we have? We have an abundance of people. They will pay to go on an expedition for a week at a time. We've got enough people to cover this. We can cover it for 12 months, 365 days out of the year. And somebody will be there 24 hours a day. Do you think that ups the possibility of us getting good video, good photographs? God forbid the North American Wood Ape Conservancy is trying to take one of these things down and collect a specimen. We could accomplish a lot of that, but nobody's having those conversations and nobody seems to be doing it. And I really don't understand why. I mean, it's easy for me to say because I don't have that, right? I don't have Area X. I don't have the 400. I don't have the Olympics in the Olympic project. I do have my 40 acres here. And I've already said, I've tried to get it ready for this summer. It's probably going to be more like the fall, but I'm going to invite people here on our property to come and experience what we experience. Come out and go out with me. Go out and camp. Hear what you hear. See what you see. And this is where I live, dude. Like, we're trying to separate these areas and these private paths that lead to our house to say, okay, here's the other 30 acres or so of the property. We're going to invite people here. And I'm willing to do that. I'm not saying I'm special by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just saying I don't understand why more people aren't having those kind of conversations to try to do more collaboration when it comes to this, if you're serious about the research, because there aren't enough people that are boots on the ground. I live in the woods, and I'm not in the woods as much as I'd like to be because I'm constantly in my studio doing content because that's my job. That's how I get paid. Nobody pays me to go out and look for trackways. I get paid to produce content, so that's what I constantly have to do. So it's difficult to get as many people in the woods as we should have or could have. But I think you can exponentially multiply that if you have people working in collaboration. So I'm going to get off the soapbox. I'm going to take a drink of my water and see what we can do from there.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Hey guys, I know nobody really wants to listen to ad breaks on podcasts, so instead of actually listening to those, why don't you go and check out some of the sponsors and affiliate links for the show instead? Number one, you guys can go and check out I Know Squatch for all of your squatchy gear needs, or you guys can check out Cryptotology for all of your wearable cryptid favorites, or you guys can check out Snarly Yao for a fantastic natural line of beard oil, beard balm, beard shampoo, and body wash, all with an enticing woodsy aroma of smoky cedar with a hint of mint. And he also puts on a lot of fantastic events around the West Virginia area. So if you guys are in that area, make sure you guys go and check it out and see what kind of events he's putting on, because he definitely brings in an awesome group of people. And you guys can go and check out Big Ape Threads for all of their Bigfoot and cryptid related designs. And going into the affiliate links, you guys can always go and check out the newest sponsor to the show, Organite, specializing in scale model pyramid replicas, EMF protection devices, and much more. And if you guys find any pieces that you guys want to scoop for yourself, you guys can use code OMM for 10% off at checkout. And to all the paranormal investigators out there, you guys can go and check out the Chattergeist. It is the all-in-one paranormal investigating device. My absolute favorite. I use it every single time I go out. And if you guys have any technical questions about it, you guys can always go and hit up Barry over there in Dimension Devices on Instagram. He's the guy that programmed and developed it, so he'll be able to answer any of your guys' technical questions for it. And if you use the affiliate link, you guys will receive 10% off at checkout. And just a heads up, the company is based in the UK, so when you check it out on the website, it will be in pounds. But when you guys use PayPal, it will convert over, so don't think that you guys can't scoop one just because you don't live in the UK. And don't forget to check out the affiliate link for Sticker Mule to receive a $10 credit towards your first purchase. Over there you can get a bunch of stickers printed, t-shirts, posters, all that kind of stuff. So if you guys are another podcast and you guys are looking for good quality stuff in order to print your logos on, Sticker Mule is definitely the place for you. And more information on all of those, of course, is available down in the show description. Let's quickly run through some commercials and get back into the show. And we are back, so let's hop right in. No, man, you're totally good. And I definitely agree with you, man. I think that it's one of those things that we probably would have a lot better of a chance if there was more people that were actually physically there trying to do it. I think the biggest fear that people have with most of their properties, when it comes to actually having a good area where they're having regular experiences happening, is that they're worried about like scaring them off. Because if you have too many people rotating through, these things are going to start moving farther and farther back. And I mean, even if you work in small groups, you know, if you're three different people and you're always coming with two new people, I think the other fear might be that, again, if they're constantly seeing these new faces, they're going to be less interested in being in the area and they're going to keep pushing themselves out. And it's like one of those things that nobody's really tested it to necessarily see if that is the cause and effect that ends up happening. But I don't think anybody's willing to like take the chance if they do have a good solid area, especially if it's on their property.
Well, see, I disagree, because I think the North American Wood Ape Conservancy and Area X is a very good litmus test for what you just said. I tend to agree with you. On most cases, that's one of the conversations we had with Shane Carpenter about he and Randy's area out at the 400, is they are afraid of that. They have seen people come in and it makes it difficult. They do retreat. They do go back. So I think it's an individual thing, but Area X, again, is a good barometer, I think, for that, because the North American Wood Ape Conservancy has, at any given time, on any given month, and I'm going by some of the audio I just edited from like 2012, 2013. But over the course of 3 months, they had 35 people rotate in and out of these teams. They had Alpha team, Charlie team, Delta team, Lima team, whatever. Four or five, sometimes as much as seven individuals at a time. But these teams rotated in and out. Some people would stay. One person might say, I can do Alpha and Bravo team. I can be out here for a month, or I can be out here for 3 weeks. But they're constantly rotating people in and out. And the exact opposite has happened. One of the, I can't remember what episode it would be, probably the second hour of what would be a new episode of audio that I edited recently, Brian and them were talking about, they had activity on Alpha Team, which is the first team in this particular year. I think this would have been 2011 or 2012. I don't know if it was Operation Persistence, which operation it was for them. They named the operations. But Delta team, which was the fourth team in, had the most rock throw encounters of anybody throughout the summer. So they had them all throughout, but they had like 160 different, I think they stopped at documenting like 160 or 170 individual rock throw incidents that they had. And they're the fourth team in, and some of these people had never been out there before. So I get what you're saying, but I think if done correctly, particularly in an area like Area X, where if these things are real, they are wood apes, they are Sasquatch, as they claim that they are, that's the area to do it, because they are used to people rotating in and out during these 3 or 4 months in the summer. It's the perfect opportunity to do it. Now, would it change if you don't leave for the last time and the last person leaves and you roll up shop at August the 31st, and then you start doing things in September, October, November, December? Could that cause problems? It possibly could. for whatever reason, right? It may be something new to them. They're like, holy shit, why are these people still here? Oh my God, we're heading for the hills, right? That could happen. I just don't know. You don't know until you try. That's one of the things that Todd does. He kind of shuts down his radium area during the winter, A, because it's really hard to get to because it's 18 miles deep and you don't want to be out there in the middle of a snowstorm. But the other reason that he claims that he does that is to give the Sasquatch a break. They're constantly doing weekly. Every single week, there's a new person or persons coming in for an expedition. And then you give them a break over the wintertime. So they're kind of like, oh, okay, we can let our guard down. You know, the hairless apes won't be back until June or whatever. I get that. But again, I don't know. It's easy for me to Monday morning quarterback and say that because I don't control access to Area X. But I do think we should at least start having some of those conversations because clearly what we've been doing for the last 5 decades or so isn't working because outside of the people who know, I'm not just a believer, I'm a knower for whatever reason, who've had eyewitness encounters, sighted these things, whatever. Outside of that, they are not documented and recognized by science. And I think the only way we're going to get there, unfortunately, is either take a specimen, collect a specimen, or get into a situation where you can document over and over and over individuals with high quality video and or photographs, different people at different times, at different places, but you can start identifying individuals through these photographs and videos that may be enough to push the ball down the field, to maybe get something else going. So we might be able to get some real evidence and prove it once and for all, one way or the other, if these things do exist.
I mean, a couple different comments as far as going about that method too. I mean, if you had enough people, one good way of possibly doing it, if you had somewhat of a square property, is you kind of almost have to do like the grid lines where you'd have two, you know, people coming in from this side, coming in from this side, and everybody basically meeting in the middle so that nothing's able to slip through in the center of it. And the other thing that I was thinking about, if you have constant new people in the area, is rather than pushing them back, depending on if these things are more animalistic, they might become territorial, and then you might end up having some better experiences, but they just might be more of the aggressive experiences, such as rock throwing, for example, or bluff charging. So it might actually end up pushing it up, if anything. And then on the other side of it too, I was going to mention something about not doing it fully on a schedule, but somewhat like taking some time off on the in-between. Because I mean, if you did it every other month, I feel like Sasquatch would get somewhat used to that schedule and they would possibly know not to be too active in an area at that particular time. Because I had Michael on the show at one point and he was kind of telling a little bit of the backstory with his dad's footage that he had. And he basically said that he used to go at the same time every day. And the reason why he finally captured that footage is because he had to stop and help his daughter with something with her car or something. And he came at a different time. So if you're going to be doing the regular checking of the same spot, you'd almost have to do it semi-sporadic, where you'd be 2 weeks on, don't touch anything for 2 weeks. Go for 3 weeks on, don't come back for a month. Go for a month straight. Just kind of do it where it's in blocks, but not on a set schedule. And then you might actually be able to be lucky enough to catch these things off guard. And even within that time that you're going out too, you almost have to do stuff at staggered, semi-sporadic times too, where you kind of do it to somewhat of a science, maybe, where, you know, the first day you start looking around 7 o'clock and then you go in the house for a couple hours. And the next day you start looking at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and kind of let the hours and just kind of stagger the hours that you go in. And I feel like that'd be the best chance of actually catching one of these things, is to not do a full search team on a set schedule, but rather do this kind of weird staggered repeated going out. And then you might actually be able to catch one of these things off guard. And you just, again, have to look out for possibly the more aggressive encounters if they start getting more territorial with more faces on in their property.
Yeah, I think you're very spot on when you're talking about that stuff. I think one of the things that has come out of the NAWAC and Area X in particular over and over and over again is you don't see these things unless they make a mistake. It's not something that's just outside of what they call old gray or old gray. There's this big Sasquatch that a couple of people, I think Daryl, and somebody else saw it back in 2012. I don't know how many times he's been seen completely. I say he or she has been seen, but it's basically this gray Sasquatch from head to toe. It's pretty large. And outside of old gray, who just doesn't seem to be bothered by people, doesn't make any attempts to get away, just kind of, they say he looks very much like Patty, the just quintessential, if you're thinking about Sasquatch, that Patterson-Gimlin film, 352 Patty. That's what they say old gray looks like. The rest of them don't. But they're experiencing these wood apes. Most of them are smaller. They don't look like Patty. It's a very different experience, and they are very agile. They do their very best to get away. And it's, you know, so I don't think you see these things unless you make a mistake, or they're just so big and lumbering that they just don't care.
I mean, that old one too, it could be the kind of the same as having a dog, for example, where after a certain age, they start going partially blind, partially deaf. And it's a little bit easier to sneak up on him because he isn't fully comprehensive of what's going on around him anyways.
Or he could be just like, I think Brian Brown in one of the episodes I was editing said, you know, it's like going to he went to the zoo with his kids, and they went to the orangutan enclosure, and all these orangutans were like running from people and kind of hiding and didn't want to be seen, except for this one huge female. She just lumbered out, and all the other orangutans got out of her way, and she gave less than a shit about what was going on around her. She's just like, I'm here. Whatever happens, happens. And
it's like the wise alpha.
Exactly. Exactly. So it could be one of those situations. I don't know, but it seems to me that that's the thing about Area X. I keep going back to it because it is such a long-term study that they've done with these, and they've collected a lot of data. Again, disagree with their methods, disagree with them wanting to take a specimen, whatever, you know, everybody has their feelings about that kind of stuff, but you can't deny the work and the time they've put in and the data that they've collected over the years. And as a part of that data, you see these bits and pieces of things emerge, and you have to just say they're onto something here because of some of the things they've experienced. They don't think these things migrate. They seem to stay in one place for whatever reason. They do throw rocks. They vocalize. They're clearly intelligent. And they're apes. That's the thing. That's the other thing. They call them wood apes for a reason. And they certainly believe that they're flesh and blood creatures. And I know, again, that's a whole nother rabbit hole we can go down some other time, I guess, with the high strangeness and the woo part of all of this. But ultimately, I think they're a good litmus test for anybody who's wanting to do research over a long period of time and a way to get it done, no matter what the ultimate goal for you is, whether it's just to document, you're the Jane Goodall type, or you're going in to actually catch a specimen. But it's like this. They spend so many hundreds of hours at this point. We're talking accumulation of years they've spent in this area with so many people. They've only taken a couple of shots at these things and barely missed, so they claim, killing a Sasquatch to take a specimen, to collect a specimen. And they have very few, if any, photographs to prove that these things are real. So that tells you how elusive these things are. They know they're there. They're throwing rocks at them. They're vocalizing. They can hear them running through the woods. People are seeing them, but it's almost impossible to catch that photograph or get a video of these things, and certainly even take one down with a rifle. So, and that's their goal. They're trying to do that, and they haven't done it yet. So that says a lot about, I think, Sasquatch just in general. I know a lot of people draw parallels to, okay, that clearly means that they're alien, or that clearly means that they're coming in and out of portals, or clearly means that there's some supernatural being. I'm not sure I'm going down that road with you, but it certainly means that there is something more to these things than maybe we've ever considered. I don't know.
I mean, at least in that area too, if somebody's used to, if you're in a Sasquatch area and they're used to constantly being gifted, they're going to be acting one certain way. But if they're constantly used to people trying to record them and shoot at them, then I feel like they're going to, of course, be a lot more sporadic anyways. And they're going to be used to living in an environment where they have to be on high alert all the time. So I almost wonder if it's like they're territorial to the point where they're not going to leave their area because that is their area. But they just start acting completely different based on how you interact with them. And you almost give yourself less of a chance by trying to shoot at them because they know, they're fully aware of what guns are. They've known for hundreds of years now at this point. And they know to completely avoid those things. I mean, whether or not you can take one down is a whole other topic of debate with a gun. But regardless, assumably, you're still going to hurt the thing. So it's going to avoid having contact with that in the first place.
Very true. Very true, my friend.
We will be right back after this brief commercial break, so stay tuned. And we are back, so let's hop right in. And before we start running out of time completely. I know you kind of talked a little bit about your book, but for anybody that might be interested in picking up your book, why don't you kind of give them like a rough run over exactly of what they're going to get from your book?
Sure. It's titled Sasquatch Unleashed, The Truth Behind the Legend. It's a little bit of everything, man. I talk about my journey, my experience. I talked a little bit about here as a kid, and then I get into the phenomenon of Sasquatch. We know that exists, so I kind of wanted to start there and lay the foundation. I talk a lot about Sasquatch in history. Then I get into Bigfoot in pop culture, all the pop culture references, how Bigfoot really has become a household name. I think I've talked about it so many times with people before. I think Bigfoot is one of the few things that you could go to literally any house in America and talk to the mother, the father, the two kids. If they're old enough, say 10, 12 years old, everybody knows what Bigfoot is. They have this idea of Bigfoot because it is so permeated our culture. So I'll talk a lot about that. Then I get into Sasquatch deceptions and hoaxes. I call some hoaxers out by name. I think that's one of the biggest issues that we have in this community nowadays is people hoaxing evidence and really pointing people in the wrong direction.
AI images too. There's way too many AI images I see posts on every single Sasquatch page.
Exactly. And then I get into, I do an entire chapter about my experiences up in Radium on expedition with Todd last year. Then I get into perils of pareidolia and misidentification. I talk about how fallible we are as humans, as eyewitnesses. I bring a little bit of my police work into that and talk about eyewitness identifications and those kind of things. I talk about the scientific method. I get into the fun breakdown of fossilization. I know that is an exciting topic for everybody is talking about fossilization, but everybody says, where are the bodies, right? So I went into that and talked about that in its own chapter and talked about how difficult it is to actually fossilize, particularly a large body like a primate. And that's why we have a very incomplete fossil record just across the board in general. So I talk a lot about that. Then I get into some of the primate behaviors that aid known primates in how they are elusive and how they avoid detection and how that could possibly be at least partially some of the answers that we may point to say this is why Sasquatch has eluded us for so long. And I get into human population and wilderness loss. I have a chapter called Can We Convict Sasquatch in a Court of Law? And I kind of break down the evidence that we have for the existence of Sasquatch. And I've said it on the show before. I think if Sasquatch were on trial for being real, I think a jury is going to convict at this point. I'm pretty confident of that. So I talk a lot about that. Then I get into some of the woo, the high strangeness. I talk about habituation situations. And then just our general fascination as people with cryptids and our escapism mentality that we have in the modern world and how that kind of plays into the whole Bigfoot thing. And then I close out with what I believe to be the truth behind the legend. And spoiler alert, part of that is the truth really lies in all of us. I caught a little crap when I put the book out. People were like, oh, you know the truth about Sasquatch. Well, you know what? Spoiler alert. No, I really don't, because I don't think anybody does.
No.
The truth really lies with what you believe. It's your experiences. It's what you take away from it, whether it's the phenomenon, whether it's your own experiences, whatever the case may be. The truth really is, it lies with all of us. But I do close out with a chapter of that. So you can get the book anywhere. You can buy it on Amazon. It's probably the easiest place for people. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. If you want a signed copy, we do autographed copies. We send out a couple of times a week. You can get them on our website at paranormalworldproductions.com. There's a store button right there at the top of the page, and you can go over and I'll autograph, personalize the book, and we'll send it out to you.
Man, I'll have to scoop one of those for myself. I like being able to collect a bunch of books from guests I've previously had on the show. Like, this entire bookcase is 99% guests that I've had on the show at this point. But, man, you had so much stuff that we could possibly dive into. And for at least this time, man, I think this was like a perfect introductory to having you on the show. But I definitely want to dive, hopefully on the next show, that if you're interested in coming back on again, into some of the philosophy and stuff behind it. Because as far as like what you're talking about, as far as the content of your book, is exactly a lot of the stuff that I like talking about on the show, such as, again, like where are the bodies, things like that. Like a lot of the more like literal stuff that people don't necessarily always dive into. But I feel like it's just as important for the research as anything else, or even catching some solid footage. It's just as important to kind of have that groundwork and framework and fundamentals of it. But I always like to kind of wrap up the show with words of wisdom. So if there was any words of wisdom that you could bestow on the listeners, be it to squatchers, podcasters, whoever out there, what might it be?
I would say, don't eat yellow snow.
Maybe collect it, because maybe it might be Sasquatch pee, but more often than not, it might be dog or human pee.
After an hour and a half, that's the best I could come up with, Shane. It's been a long day.
Man, talk about a long day. The listeners here, they're going to be hearing this after the event, but I'm actually going to be going to sleep right after we're done recording this, waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning, then driving to a convention. So woke up early today, got everything all set up. Want to make sure we recorded the show, because I know that when we're trying to set the schedule with you, you only had certain days you're available for. But yeah, man, I feel you on that one.
Definitely.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we are back, so let's hop right in. And for anybody that might want to come and find your podcast, you already told them where to come and find the book at, or possibly get in contact with you to share some of their experiences. Where can people come and find you, and where can people come and find your show?
Yeah, you can find Sasquatch Odyssey. I talked about it a couple of times. I host a show called That Bigfoot Podcast with my co-host Wayne. It's definitely a different show. It's kind of a conversation-based show like this. We tackle all kinds of things. We talk about hoaxers. We talk about things in the news. It's a fun show. We have a good time over there. We will drop the occasional F-bomb, so beware of that. It is labeled explicit on all podcast apps. But you can find Sasquatch Odyssey, That Bigfoot Podcast. I also do a storytelling show where I just read encounters and talk about weird and crazy, scary stories. It's called Backwoods Horror Stories. You can get that anywhere you get podcasts, on all the podcast apps. And you can check out the Sasquatch Odyssey YouTube channel and the Backwoods Horror Stories YouTube channel. And the best place to get all of that stuff really is our website. It's paranormalworldproductions.com. It's got a little bit of me about all the shows. We have other shows that work for our network as well. It's not just me, the shows I host. We have other podcasters that do a fantastic job. So there's a little bit of everything for everybody. So just check out the website. It's all there.
Well, man, I appreciate you making the time to come on the show today. It was definitely a fascinating conversation, and I'm looking forward to next time you come on the show.
Yeah, I had a blast, Shane. Thanks so much, man.
If anyone is interested in being a guest on the show, having me as a guest on your show, sponsoring the show, or getting a hold of me for any reason whatsoever, you guys can get a hold of me through email, which is increaseourrealitypodcast@outlook.com, or through social media, Instagram or Facebook. Instagram is the one that I am the most active on, of course. Or you guys can get a hold of me through the submission forms, which are available on the link tree. And if anybody is interested in podcast or audiobook production services, you guys can shoot me a message through Open Minds Media. The link tree for that is available down in the show description also. And every single thing that I mentioned throughout the entire show is available in the link tree, which is available down in the show description. And with that, hope you guys enjoyed the conversation, and I'll catch you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody.